City Talk 105.9, the home of great music and great conversation. And this is Take 5 with me, Will Batchelor. As ever, it is the show that each and every weekday invites a different studio guest to imagine that their house is on fire. It sounds pretty horrible, I know, but the good news is they are out of the building safely. They've got their family out, they've got their pets out. All living beings are away from the inferno, and they have just enough time to run back in and rescue five records, and only five, that is five singles you can take from the inferno. And the gentleman putting himself into that unfortunate metaphorical situation today is Ian McNabb, frontman of the Icicle Works and all-round general legend of the Liverpool music scene. Ian, how are you doing?
I'm very well, sir. How are you?
I'm good. You've just given me a thumbs up on that intro. Do you classify yourself as a legend? Is that fair?
Absolutely not, sir. Absolutely not. I'm just a guy that can play the guitar and sing and imitate my legends.
You can do more than play the guitar, though, because you can sing, you can play guitar. Don't you play the bass and the piano and a few other instruments as well?
You're very kind. Yes, I do, but, you know, I'm a fan who can.
Is that how you see yourself?
Yeah, totally.
So tell me about the young Ian McNabb when you were a fan. Which bands were you idolising? Which musicians were you idolising?
Mark Bolan. When I was about 12, I saw Mark Bolan on Top of the Pops. And I thought pop music was silly because it went, last night I heard my mama singing a song, ooh, chirpy, chirpy, cheep, cheep. And I thought, that's not cool. But I saw the Apollo missions to the moon and I thought, that's proper. That is what I want to do.
Are these the first Apollo missions? That was sort of 1969.
Nine?
Yeah.
Yeah, my dad got me out of bed when I was about seven, something like that, probably younger than that. And I saw the Apollo missions and I thought, that's cool. And I thought pop music was daft until I saw Mark Bolan on Top of the Pops doing Get It On. And I went, what the hell is that all about?
So how old would you have been roughly when Mark Bolan was doing Get It On?
About 10.
About 10, yeah.
10 or 11. And I just thought, that is so amazing. I couldn't understand what it was, you know. Somebody playing a guitar with great corkscrew hair and singing this song going, Get It On. And I didn't know what Get It On meant. I should hope not,
at the tender age of 10.
I know what it means now, but at that point, I ordered my parents to get me a guitar. And they bought me a guitar.
And did they need much persuading? Or were you kind of a spoiled child who would get what he wanted anyway?
You know me so well. Yeah, so I'm an only child. Ah. So I was a spoiled child who could get whatever he wanted. But unfortunately, I didn't know anything about maths or physics and I was rubbish at everything like that, which would have enabled me to be an astronaut or a test pilot or something like that. But I could play the guitar, so that's what I ended up doing.
Did you have musical genes? Was your mum or dad musical? Did you have uncles who played?
Not at all. The family sang at Christmas, but nobody played an instrument. It's still a question, you know. How come you ended up doing this? Because there was none of that in the family.
Because I wondered, with a surname like McNabb, I'm guessing you might have kind of Scottish or Irish roots. And often you hear guys, I mean, like Paul McCartney would say, the whole thing about being Liverpool Irish is that everyone had to do a turn, everyone had to play. But it sounds like that wasn't your childhood necessarily.
That's a very good point. Everybody did have to do a turn at Christmas. You know, everybody had to sing a song, but it wasn't like what you're saying. This is not my first choice of a job. I wanted to be a test pilot.
Wow.
But I'm just not clever enough. But I'm clever enough to be a musician.
Well, I tell you what, a second choice jobs go, it ain't bad, is it, being a frontman of the Icicle Works? And you've worked with so many other groups along the way in a musical career that's, I guess, spanning about four decades now, isn't it? Or certainly three and a half, because you started out very young. We'll talk about that, Ian McNabb, my guest for this hour on Take 5. But before we do that, let's get your first song up and running. It's not Mark Bolan. It's My Generation by The Who, another absolute belter. Tell us why you've gone for this one.
Because it's 3:40 of total excitement, mono, power, and the end of it, it sounds like the record is breaking.
Fantastic. Are you ready for 3 minutes 40 of excitement and power?
I'm ready.
Absolutely. Well, let's give it a go, shall we? Let's have 3 minutes 40 of excitement. God, it sounds like my Saturday night. It's The Who and My Generation on City Talk 105.9. City Talk 105.9, the voice of Liverpool. My God, I'm excited. I don't know about you. That was 3 minutes 40 seconds of excitement. So thank you to my guest for this hour on Take 5, who bestowed that excitement upon us. His name is Ian McNabb. You will know him, I'm sure, from the Icicle Works. Although, Ian, you've done all sorts of other musical collaborations over the years as well, haven't you?
How exciting was that record?
It was exciting.
That's... Do you know what the hardest thing to do is to get that much excitement into that short space of time? And that did it brilliantly, and it's never bettered. It's never bettered.
Do you feel that you put excitement into records in the Icicle Works? Because the Icicle Works are great music, but it wasn't as sort of... balls out rock and roll, if I can put it that way.
Well, no, we were a pop band, and you know, we were kind of put in the same category as like Tears for Fears and Echo and the Bunnymen and Teardrop Explodes and all of those people, which is fine. But that record just sounds so dangerous to me and so exciting. We did a song called Love is a Wonderful Colour, which was a big hit all around the world, and then we did a song called Birds Fly. And you know, I'm proud of those records. They were great pop records, but the danger that was just in My Generation I don't think anybody has done it before or since.
You also collaborated on other works as well. Like, people might not realize that I think you co-wrote a lot of the Lightning Seed stuff, the early Lightning Seed stuff. Is that correct?
Yeah, it is. It was my pleasure to go and see my beautiful friend Ian Brodie playing the other week at the Philharmonic. He's resurrected the Lightning Seeds, and about four tunes in, he played a song that we'd written together, and I'd completely forgotten about it.
Which one was that?
It's a song called Feeling Lazy. Feeling, apostrophe, lazy. And
so lazy you can't put the G in at the end of feeling.
And it was great to hear. And Ian's a very good friend of mine, and a complete, absolute... I call him the pop detective, because he can find the pop in everything. And he's such a genius with pop music. And to watch him playing that set and to hear that song was great. And I wrote a lot of songs with Ian, and he produced the Icicle Works of... you know, biggest records he produced. And he's still going. And we're all kind of staring 50 down now. And we're still doing it. Ian McCulloch, you know, my very good friend Ian McCulloch, Ian Brodie, myself, Julian Cope, Andy McCluskey from OMD. Sure. And we're all still doing it. But, you know, it's because we can't do anything else.
But it's amazing, isn't it? Because there was that incredibly creative scene in Liverpool, musically speaking, in the 1980s, at a time actually when Liverpool was really going through a difficult period in terms of its economic depression and the gloom. And we know about the boom in the 60s, of course, with Merseybeat. Do you look at Liverpool now and feel a bit disappointed that it doesn't seem to be producing as much musical talent as it did when you were a young man, if I can put it that way, or indeed when Merseybeat was ruling the world?
That's a very good question, sir. What you got to remember is, I was born in 1960. So with the Beatles and all of that, we were just aced completely. So when we were like kids, like 17, 18, it was like, I remember we'd send demos and go down to London and stuff. And it was like, oh, well, you know, it's the Beatles, you know, you can't ever.
You're not the Beatles, so why bother?
Yes, yeah. That's what it was. And then towards the end of the 70s, you had bands like the Bunnymen and the Teardrop Explodes and what have you. And they were taking their influences from bands like the Doors and the Velvet Underground and, you know, weird American bands. And we kind of got over our Beatles thing. And then it became okay to be a band from Liverpool. What people don't remember is that the Beatles were not cool from about 1976 until the first Lars album.
Is that your official cut-off point? Is it that the Beatles became cool again? When would that be? 1989, the first Lars album? 1990?
About 1988, something like that, because...
So how does that work in your mind? How does the Lars producing their album make the Beatles cool again?
Okay.
I can spot a theory coming
Okay. You've got to understand that we had to kill the Beatles. We had to kill them because they were so amazing that we had to do something else, and we did, and... None of those bands sound like the Beatles. Like Bunny Men, Teardrops, all those bands that I keep mentioning, that we didn't sound anything like them. And then in about 1987, 1988, my guitar tech came to me and goes, oh, there's this new band, you know, they're amazing. I'm like, oh, what do they sound like? Well, they sound like the Beatles and the Rolling Stones, you know. And I went, what?
We killed them.
And that, the thing about the Lars and Lee Mavers, who is a great genius, was about, the funny thing about the Lars was they were a revisionist band who were behind the times but ahead of them. Because basically the Lars invented Britpop, which didn't really kick in till about 92, 93, and they were doing this kind of beatly,
jingly jangly,
you know, just basic kind of thing. And then Oasis came along and Blur and what have you. But when in the 80s, we had to completely do something different because everything that we did, that any noise we made, people went, oh, yeah, but you know, you're from Liverpool, so it's the Beatles. So that was a big thing to kill.
Do you know what? I like your theory, Ian McNabb, my guest for this hour on Take Five. And if you don't mind, I'm going to adopt that and pass it off as my own in the pubs of Liverpool as I spend.
As long as you credit me.
I'll give you a credit. I'll give you a co-author on that. But that's great, yeah. Uncool from 1976 till the release of the Lars' first album. I love it. Now, you have to rescue five records from this metaphorical house fire, as you know, Ian. You've already chosen My Generation by The Who. We're going to get your second one out of the way in just a second. But we also get to take some other things from the flames, including a film or TV series. And you have gone for a classic film, 2001, A Space Odyssey. Well, it goes back to you wanting to be an astronaut, I guess.
Don't you agree with me?
Do you know what? I've got kind of mainstream taste in films. And this is a difficult film, I think it's fair to say, isn't it? It's not the sort of... It's not
if
an
you don't
easy
mind me asking, sir, how old are you?
I'm 33.
Right, okay. That is precisely why you're having a problem with that.
Okay.
And I'll tell you why. Because when I was about 7 or 8, my dad took me to my dad took me to the Abbey Cinerama, which was just by Picton Clock.
Yeah.
And they had a 70mm, which meant that the screen wrapped all around you. And I saw this film, 2001, and yeah, I was 7 or 8. Actually, it was probably 7. I didn't understand anything about it, but what it did was, it told me that when I got to the age I am now, I would be in space. Like, going to the moon would be like going to London and just getting on a shuttle, and space was ours. And that's the most important thing about that film. And what happened was, and also don't forget that, you know, all the Apollo missions were going on at that time, which stopped in 1972. So it looked like space was ours. It looked like we were moving out into the stars, and it didn't actually happen. So that's a big disappointment to me, because it promised something that was never delivered, and that's why 2001 is one of my favourite films.
I tell you what, if you tried to get to London on a Virgin train, sometimes it feels like space is closer. If you ever sat at Crewe Station and thought that. But I tell you what, that is a fine reason. Did your dad take you to the coffee house afterwards for a pint?
I can't remember. It was so long ago.
Okay, well, you could have that as your film to rescue from the flames, Ian. And I can see that you're a space obsessive. You're going through a sort of a lifelong David Bowie period, I think, with your obsession with all things astronomical. Your second song here is not David Bowie. It's a Beach Boys classic. It's my second favourite Beach Boys song, God Only Knows. Tell me why you've gone for this one.
What's your first?
My first, well, it's a tie, but I like Good Vibrations musically, but I also Wouldn't It Be Nice as an expression of teenage angst.
Absolutely, sir. Do you know what? I'd go with Good Vibrations as well. Okay, the reason why I've gone with God Only Knows is because it was recorded in 1966. Brian Wilson, who was the great
auteur of the Beach Boys phenomenon. And it was the first time that God was ever put in a pop song. And the first line is, "I may not always love you."
Yeah.
Which just basically says that I'm not that bothered, but I can't cope without you. The arrangement, he was so far ahead of his time. It's like Mozart. And the Beatles really kind of had to respond to that because they were doing Rubber Soul and Revolver at the time, which obviously are absolutely amazing records. But Brian Wilson was ahead of the game with the arrangements. And then if we wouldn't have had God Only Knows, we wouldn't have had Sgt. Pepper.
Do you know what? Brian Wilson is an absolute genius. And that's your second piece of Ian McNabb wisdom I'm going to steal. Straight after I've done the last one, I'm going to say, if we hadn't had the Beach Boys, we wouldn't have had Sgt. Pepper's.
You owe me.
I'm taking it. I'm going to give you £1 for each of your theories I steal. I tell you what, you need to stick around to this show. It is Take 5 on City Talk 105.9. If you, like me, want to pilfer some more of Ian McNabb's wisdom, then stay exactly where you are. In the meantime, let's have a bit of God Only Knows by the Beach Boys. City Talk 105.9 at home, a great music and great conversation. That's God Only Knows by the Beach Boys. It was the second choice on today's Take 5 with me, Will Batchelor, of my guest, Ian McNabb, of the Icicle Works fame, and a great pop theorist, as we are discovering. If you want to hear some more of his theories, stay where you are. We shall also hear the other three records he's going to save from the flames. City Talk 105.9. City Talk 105.9, the home of great music and great conversation. This is Take 5 with me, Will Batchelor. It is the show which invites a different studio guest each day to imagine which five singles, and it is only five, they would save if their house was on fire, as well as a few other bits and pieces, a film, a book, a photograph, and an object as well. And my guest for today, I'm very pleased to say, is Ian McNabb of the Icicle Works. Not only a fine Liverpool musician, but also apparently the sweetest man in rock and roll. That's a quote, as you know, Ian, from Alan McGee, the founder of Creation Records. Why did he say that about you?
Hey, Will, thanks for bringing that up.
Yeah. You can pay me for that.
Alan is an old friend of mine. He obviously the founder of Creation Records, and he found Oasis, and he likes rock and roll and danger and anything that's got a bit of edge to it, and he said that about me, and I'm very grateful, you know.
But are you a sweet man? You seem very sweet to me, but surely to survive in rock and roll you need to have a bit of animal about you. I mean, your book is called Mersey Beast, which kind of suggests that you're a little bit of an animal, and your mum was quoted on the dust cover saying that she doesn't like it because the women get treated badly and there's too many drugs. So what are you? Are you a sweet man, or are you a rock and roll Mersey Beast?
You're putting me through it, Will. Basically what I am is I love music and that is all that matters. I treat people with respect, and anybody that treats me with respect is allowed in. And if you like music, you'll get on very well with me.
So do you see, because you must have been on tours and various dates and gigs and stuff, where you've seen rock and roll people treating others with disrespect, you know, ordering people around, being arrogant, letting the fame get to their heads. What do you do? Do you challenge them? Do you just sort of silently pity them? How do you react?
Well, I mean, I had a little bit of that, you know, because when I first made it, you know, when the Icicle Works were having hits and stuff, I mean, I was like 21, 22. And at that stage of the game, even if you're not a musician, you think the world owes you a living. You know,
yeah.
You think you're fantastic, and then the ego is boosted so much if something like that happens. And I was a bit of an a-hole, you know, at that time. And then as you get older, you learn to appreciate the gifts that have been given to you, and the fact that you can make music and make money from it. And you know, most people have to work for a living, and we just write songs and go on tour around the world and get paid for it. And it's just an amazing thing. Will.
So if you can focus on that, that kind of diffuses any bad mood or arrogance you might have. If you just take a step back and think, I'm a lucky man.
Absolutely. I think that every day. You know, I'm approaching 50 now, and I've been doing this since I was 15. And I don't consider that I've ever had a proper job. I've been paid to play music, and make people happy, and thank God they're still listening, and I really appreciate it.
If it's not a crude question, have you got to a stage financially from your music where you'd never have to work again, or do you have to keep plugging away?
Not at all, Will. I'm not one of those guys that has, you know, like my friend Carl Wallinger from World Party, remember them? Robbie Williams covered one of his songs and he made a lot of money from that. Another friend of mine, Dave McCabe from the Zootons, you know, he had Amy Winehouse cover Valerie, which you hear. And, you know, they're beautiful friends of mine and they don't have to worry about money.
That's it, just one big cover in your set, are you,
just
in the music biz?
Unfortunately, I haven't had that, but I can't complain about it because I still get paid for playing music. And, you know,
so you're waiting for the day when Ronan Keating covers Love Is a Wonderful Colour or something like that?
Absolutely.
No, you're not meant to say that. You meant to say, oh, no, love, it's all about
no,
the music.
No, I'm not. It's all about the music.
That's better. That's more like it. Well, this show is all about the music. It is Take 5 on City Talk 105.9. And my guest for this hour is Ian McNabb. He's talking us through the 5 records he would save from the flames of his metaphorically, thankfully, burning home. We've had 2 already, My Generation by The Who and God Only Knows by The Beach Boys. Going to get to a rock and roll classic very shortly. Before we do that, though, we must find out which photograph you're going to pluck from your home, Ian. And you've gone down the line of some people choose a family picture, some people choose an iconic photograph. You want to choose an iconic one, and you've gone for Buzz Aldrin on the moon.
Yeah. You know what, Will? The funny thing about the first moon landing was that there isn't actually any pictures of Neil Armstrong on the moon. Neil Armstrong took a picture of Buzz Aldrin.
He had the camera.
And don't tell me you're one of those people that doesn't believe we landed.
No, don't worry, I'm fine. Okay. I believe we did, yeah.
Okay, thank you. That picture of Buzz Aldrin is one of the most iconic photographs of all time. And the reason why I've chosen that, and as you say, you know, you could have chosen a family picture or whatever. I just think that landing on the moon was, for those people who believe we did, and I know there's a lot who don't, we did, by the way. I just think that was the greatest achievement in human history because it showed that we could break the bounds of our planet and move on to somewhere else. And that picture symbolises it for me. And I was just so disappointed that, as I said before, we didn't carry on. And that picture is amazing because it's a man from Earth standing on another planet. What could be greater?
It is incredible. And I kind of wondered if you'd gone for Buzz Aldrin. I didn't realise that it was Neil Armstrong who had the camera, although now you say it, that makes perfect sense. I almost wondered if you were kind of sympathising, if you like, or relating to Buzz Aldrin, because with respect...
Because he was the second man on the moon.
Well, because with the greatest respect, you're a fantastic Liverpool musician, but you mentioned a few names earlier of guys, your peers, your very good friends, who have had monster success, where you've had great cult success and some limited mainstream success. Mm. So I almost wondered if you were kind of drawn to Buzz Aldrin as that kind of nearly man, if you don't mind me saying.
Oh, that is fantastic. Maybe subliminally I am. That's great.
Do you want that theory?
I've given you a couple, so you've given me one there. That isn't actually what I was thinking about, but obviously that's in the back of my mind.
It's a nice one. You can have that, and I'm going to take yours. We're swapping theories today on Take 5 on City Talk 105.9. Before it gets too esoteric, should I say, perhaps we should get back down to some plain old rock and roll. Your third song is, well, to some people, I guess, the birth of rock and roll. Bill Haley and his Comets, Rock Around the Clock. Do I need to ask why you've gone for this one?
Well, Bill Haley is always stepped over for Elvis and Little Richard and Buddy Holly and Gene Vincent. But you listen to that record. That was the record. I was in a film called Blackboard Jungle. And people were going to see that film just to hear that song. And if you listen to Rock Around the Clock, Bill Haley wasn't a cool guy. You know, he had that little kiss curl and he was a bit of a large gentleman and stuff. But listen to Rock Around the Clock and I defy you not to dance around your living room.
It's fantastic. And do you know what? Just a couple of weeks ago on this very show, we had the Liverpool legend, Liverpool FC legend, that is Ian St John, who chose it for very similar reasons. And he actually had a little dance around the studio himself.
Fantastic.
Are you a Red?
Of course I am. So there you go. I can't say what I am because if I say I'm a red, it's like the Beatles. Okay, it's like the Beatles. Have you noticed that the Beatles never came down on the side of any football
team?
Certainly
not McCartney. Yeah.
Well, I know stuff which I can't say on air. But the reason why they never said red or blue was because they didn't want to alienate anyone.
Well, I tell you what, we'll risk it, shall we? Ian McNabb's a red. He's just admitted it, and he cheered silently when I told him that Saint had chosen the same song as him on Take 5 on City Talk 105.9, and that song was Rock Around the Clock. City Talk 105.9, a home of great music and great conversation. That's Rock Around the Clock by Bill Haley and his Comets. Sometimes Bill Haley and the Comets. You're a bit of a pop trivia expert, Ian McNabb, my guest for this hour. Did you know that? Sometimes it's his Comets, sometimes it's the
Bill
Comets.
Bill Haley and his Comets? Yeah. Or the Comets?
I think it depends which record press went out. I think they did some with the and some with his. I think Bill Haley and his Comets sounds a bit egomaniacal, doesn't it? Like, they're not just the Comets, they're my Comets. And anyone who tries to take him off me is going to have to deal with me, Bill Haley, a large gentleman.
Well, do you know what, Will? It doesn't matter because that record's so great.
Absolutely right. So you're not going to change the name of your band to My Icicle Works?
Absolutely not, sir.
Fantastic stuff. Glad to hear it. You're actually touring again, I should mention this, actually, with the Icicle Works. You're playing in Chester. Well, actually, you're playing with the Icicle Works Liverpool December the 12th at the O2 Academy. And I noticed as well from your website, you're playing Chester on November the 2nd, Telford's Warehouse, Manchester November the 21st at the Academy 3. Are they both with the Icicle Works, or are those two gigs solo?
Well, all the gigs, apart from the one at the O2 Academy on December the 12th, is it?
Correct.
They're all solo shows, but on December the 12th, we're playing the first Icicle Works album in its entirety. Because that's what people do now.
Well, that's good.
You play the great album and do a bit of
something. You say that in a self-mocking way, as if there's something wrong with that. What's wrong with playing a full album?
Well, there's nothing wrong with it. I mean, that's the best album that the Icicle Works made. And Echo and the Bunnymen did it last year with Ocean Rain, which was their finest album. Mm. And people like it because they know they're going to get to hear that record in its entirety and a few other songs.
So that is a special treat for purist Icicle Works fans. That's Liverpool December the 12th, but if you're just an Ian McNabb fan, you can see you in Chester or Manchester or a few other gigs as well knocking around, I'm sure.
Thanks, Will.
Now, you have to choose a book that you're going to save from this house fire as well, Ian, and you've gone for The Right Stuff by Tom Wolfe. Tell me why.
Yeah. Have you read it?
Is Tom Wolfe, is he the American guy who sort of satirises wealthy American society?
Yes.
Not read that one. I've read one called I Am Charlotte Simmons.
He also wrote Bonfire of the Vanities.
Yes, he did, of course.
Which was made into a terrible film.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, basically, that book by Tom Wolfe, The Right Stuff, is about the Gemini space programme. I'm repeating myself, aren't I?
That's okay. You like space, we've established that.
I love space. And it's all about the fact, it's about the Cold War and the fact that the Americans really ramped up their game to get into space because they were in a battle with the Russians.
Yeah, a PR battle as much as
anything. Yeah, absolutely. And if you think about it, when John F. Kennedy said in 1961 or 1962, We plan to put a man on the moon before the end of this decade, not because it is easy, but because it is hard. And everybody in the space program was going, what? We do not have the technology to do that. And that book is basically about how they got from rockets that they'd put on the launch pad that would lift up and turn round and crash into the ground and explode to actually getting them into space. And it's the most wonderful thing. That's what I'm into. I'm an aviator. I'm an aviator, but with no mathematical or physical or chemical or any.
Is there
talent.
No way we can get you into space? Because I'm sensing the theme here. Could we not, you know, get you on as? Didn't one of the lads from NSYNC go into space? You know, the American boy band. You know,
do you know what, Will? I'm earthbound. I'm earthbound. And that guy, you know, he's in a boy band. So boy bands can go into space, but I can't.
Boy bands can go into space, but Ian McNabb can't. It's absolutely unfair. There's no justice in the world. But The good thing is you are earthbound, which means we get you here in City Talk 105.9, being my guest on Take 5. Got two more songs yet to come from Ian McNab, plus we'll find out which object he would save from his metaphorical burning home as well. That's all coming up. Stay where you are. City Talk 105.9. City Talk 105.9, this is the home of great music and great conversation, and this is Take 5 with me, Will Batchelor. Don't forget, we've got Drive Time coming up in just about 10 or 15 minutes' time with Peter Mack, driving you home safely between 3 and 7. And within that show, of course, there is City Talks Football, all things football between 6 and 7. So if you want to get on board with that, if you want to have a rant, if you're a red, like a certain other person in this studio, if you're a blue, or even if you're a white, then get involved in City Talks Football between 6 and 7. In the meantime, we're not talking football. Well, we are a little bit. We're talking music mainly. And my guest is none other than Ian McNab of the Icicle Works. And, well, many other musical collaborations too. And we've gone through his list so far. We have had My Generation by The Who, God Only Knows by The Beach Boys, Rock Around the Clock by Bill Haley and His Comets, and an awful lot of space talk, which is fine because Ian's got a passion. He's earthbound, but he's looking up to space. If you're lying in the gutter, at least you're looking in the stars, Ian.
Space is ace. No, some of us are lying in the gutter, but we're looking at the curb.
Yeah, is that right? That's the new version of that one, is
yeah,
it?
That's my version.
Space is Ace. That could be your new album.
Space is Ace. Yeah,
if I see that on the shelves, then I'm going to want my cut of that as well. We just seem to spend the whole show horse trading different theories and ideas.
It's okay.
I'm getting a sense this is what being in the pub with Ian McNab is like, just kind of constantly bantering ideas around. Is it an uplifting experience going out for a night out with you, Ian?
Well, being in the pub with Ian McNab is just basically having a few drinks and me talking about music and space and anything else you've got, really. I'm a good raconteur.
Where do we find you? Do you drink in Liverpool City Centre?
No,
do you stay on the outskirts? Do you not? Do you stay at home?
I don't drink at home. Never drink at home.
No, it's sad, isn't it?
Gentlemen, don't drink at home. If I do go out, I go to a couple of little bars that, you know, no one knows about.
Where you don't get bothered.
Where I don't get bothered.
Do you get bothered? I mean, because you are, you know, you had a hell of a platform in Liverpool in the 80s. Can you walk through town without people kind of going, all right, Ian?
In a completely unegotistical way, no, I can't.
And do you like it? Are you neutral about it?
I really like it if it's beautiful women.
Yeah, well, why wouldn't you? Does that still happen? Or, you see,
it still
are there beautiful
well.
Women who know you? Because it tends to be men who are more anoraki about music. So I suspect 9 times out of 10, someone who comes up to you is possibly the wrong side of 40, bulging at the gut, maybe got his Adidas old school on, an old tracksuit that was fitting him a lot better in the 1980s. Is that not really the sort of man who confronts you in the street, Ian?
Will, you're killing me.
I know you too well. Your next song is by some men who are also the wrong side of 40. They're probably about the wrong side of 80 by now. It's the Rolling Stones, but this was in their prime. It's Honky Tonk Women. Tell me why you've gone for this one.
Okay, many Rolling Stones songs that you could pick. I mean, I could have gone with Satisfaction or Jumpin' Jack Flash, or there's millions of them. The great thing about Honky Tonk Women is it's just got such an amazing groove. Produced by Jimmy Miller in 1969, and it's got a cowbell on it, which is very important, and it makes women want to strip.
Really? Is that been scientifically proven?
Will, I can bear witness to this.
Is that anecdotal?
No, it's the truth.
You need to be careful, because your mum did say, and we've covered this already, your mum said she wasn't keen on your book Mersey Beast because women get treated very badly. And I know that your mum is a keen listener to City Talk, so hello, Patricia, if you are listening. And I hope you're feeling better, because you're poorly.
She'll be made up with that.
So I hope you're
it,
I hope
it's
Patricia
got a cowbell on it, and it goes boom, and it's 3 minutes long. It's the perfect rock and roll record, Honky Tonk Women by the Rolling Stones.
Do you know what? I'm just going to let you say that. Do that again, Ian McNab.
Honky Tonk Women by the Rolling Stones is the perfect rock and roll record.
City Talk 105.9, that was Honky Tonk Women by the Rolling Stones. It was the fourth choice on today's Take 5 of my guest Ian McNab, not to be confused with Andy McNab, the guy from the SAS who wrote all those books. Does that ever happen?
Oh, God, all the time. I was going to call me book Bravo 3-0,
yeah,
but he's only got one B, so...
And you've got two, you've got the double B.
I've got two Bs, double
B. You should have a meeting with him, a meeting of minds. That'd be an interesting one.
Well, you know, he's a soldier and I'm a musician, and there's not much of a meeting of minds there, is, because, you know, we're hippies and they're warriors.
You're a lover, not a fighter.
Absolutely,
as the
sir.
Old saying goes, it's not Andy McNab, it is Ian McNab. You will know him from the Icicle Works and many of his other Liverpool collaborations. I mentioned this already, but I'm going to shamelessly do it again. Ian's not asked me to do this, I'm doing it voluntarily. If you're a fan of his solo work, Chester on November the 2nd at Telford's Warehouse, Manchester, November the 21st at Academy 3. But if you're a fan of the Icicle Works as a band, they will be performing their entire album at the O2 Academy on December the 12th, right here in Liverpool to the home crowd. And you've got a new album coming out, haven't you, Ian, called Great Things?
Yeah, got a new record coming out, just finished it. Dead chuffed with it. Recorded it with my friend in Wallasey Village, in somebody's back room, because that's what we do now. You don't need to go into the big studios anymore. We have this thing called Pro Tools, which is a computer program, and you can just, it's just incredible, Will, honestly. I mean, I've spent a lot of money making records over the years in vast studios all over the world, and, you know, and it was great fun to do, but now you just need that computer program. And
has that democratized music a little bit, in your opinion, or do you still, it's like the internet, anyone now can publish their writing on the internet because it's just there for anyone to use, and yet at the same time that means that any old rubbish gets put on the internet? Is it the same with music, that it's great that anyone can make music, but surely you need filters and quality control, and that's what the studios and the record companies used to provide, isn't it?
My take on that is that, do you know what, it's fair game. Anybody should be able to make music, and it's not an elite thing. You don't need to, do you know what, you don't need to have any kind of in or know anybody. Nowadays, people can just make records, and the thing is that they live or die by whether it's good or not. So you can make a record in your bedroom and put it on the internet as soon as you finished it, and everybody around the world can hear it instantly. If it's not very good, it won't fly. But if it is good, it will fly. And I think that's amazing. And the best thing about it is it's cut out all of those record companies that were just feeding off us anyway, to be honest with you.
Which bands? A mate of mine a couple of years ago said to me the reason he liked the Arctic Monkeys was that they made him feel 18 again. Which bands that are around, knocking around at the moment, make you feel 18, make you feel excited again?
Well, I'll tell you what, Will, I think the Arctic Monkeys are fantastic.
Yeah.
Absolutely brilliant. They scare me, they're so good. I couldn't do what they do. They're just so amazing. And they're on like the third or fourth album now. Mm. I think they're incredible. What I think is, I've been listening to music for so long now that I get really tired listening to the same stuff. So I listen to, you know, this program, and I listen to, I'm allowed to
yeah.
say that I listen to BBC Radio 6 Music, and there's loads of new bands on there, and there's such amazing stuff going on. I don't buy the albums anymore, as I think a lot of people don't. I listen to the tracks and then I download them.
Do you own an iPod?
No.
So do you download them onto your computer?
Yeah, I've got a MacBook Pro.
You have, which in fact is the object, because you get to save an object from the flames as well, and you're going to save your MacBook Pro. Is that because it's got all your music on?
You know, it's difficult for me to remember what it was like before we had the internet and laptops and mobile phones and stuff. I mean, I'm sure I coped, but I do have to say, like, I've got this Mac laptop, and it just brings me music, information, just it's my companion, you know, and I wherever I go in the world, I take it with me, and I feel very uncomfortable if it isn't with me. And I'm not completely happy about that, because I like to think that I'm completely independent. But I've got my laptop there, and I can listen to music and put Spotify on and listen to the radio and see what's going on.
But isn't that, in a way, it's kind of counterintuitive to what else you've said today, because you've spent the last hour telling me how obsessed you are with space, and space is just a desert, isn't it? Space is just a tundra, a wasteland out there with nothing in it. Mm. And actually, maybe it's lucky that you're earthbound, because Earth is where the music is, and if you tap into the internet, then you're in a world that's far more exciting than space could ever be.
Well, you know, it's like you want everything, don't you? I mean, what I really love is to be on my own and on a beautiful day like this, just wandering around. Nobody can get in touch with me. Nobody can find me. I don't have to, you know. But at the same time, I like to know exactly what's going on. Mm. And I think the internet is an absolutely incredible thing. But I think it's destroyed as many things as it's created.
You can't have everything. In fact, you can only have 5 songs on this show. And your 5th one is Ticket to Ride by the Beatles. Tell me where you've gone for this one.
Obviously, many, many Beatles songs that you could choose. Best pop band ever, best singers, best looking guys, just best thing. And they finished when they were starting to get no good. But Ticket to Ride, mid-period Beatles, August 1965. And what I love about it is, apart from it's got the 12-string guitar on it, it goes, "I think I'm going to be sad. The girl that's driving me mad is going away." Well, listen, John, aren't you happy that she's going away if she's driving you mad?
You're picking holes in John Lennon's song. I can't you believe you've done that, Ian McNabb. You've behaved all the way through the show, and now you're picking holes in John Lennon lyrics. Do you know what? It's been a lot of fun. It's been an education. And I've got at least 2 good theories that I'm now going to be passing off as my own, when really they are the copyright of Ian McNabb, who has been my guest for the last hour on Take 5 on City Talk 105.9. Ian, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me, Will.
And any Icicle Works fans, I'm sure, will look forward to seeing you at the O2 Academy on December the 12th. In the meantime, let's have the 5th one, shall we? It's Ticket to Ride by the Beatles. This has been Take 5 on City Talk 105.9.